you don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350 plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
What's fucked my home state?
Whoa.
Yeah.
You caught me on
Texas,
that one, bro.
That
I wasn't ready for that.
This is Behind the Bastards podcast. Bad people tell you all about them. We have an opening schema that I used in the last episode that dates back several years where I would essentially say, what's Xing my Ys? It started with generic introduction, mm-hmm. You know, what's cracking my peppers and stuff. And now it's become completely atomized from its origins and probably makes no sense to people who are just like hopping into an episode. But that's how we introduce shows sometimes. So, hello.
It's quite a joy, man. I'm not going to lie.
We don't usually introduce ourselves, and sometimes we forget to introduce our guests.
Yep. Our guest, who is, of course, Prop. I will not be saying your government name again.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's
but
fine.
All, yeah, yeah. Prop, yeah. How do you feel about Texas?
How truthful do you want me to answer this?
It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, stand this place.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't.
Now,
there's things about it that are nice.
Yeah. Now, as a caveat, there are mm-hmm. plenty of lovely people that I adore that live in Texas. One of which is my grandmother. Mm-hmm. You know, was from Sulphur Springs and moved to Dallas, and my mm-hmm. father's born in the Big D, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And like, so I got some roots out there. That being said, I don't know nobody in my family that still lives there. Mm-mm. Because pretty much estranged from that side of the family. That being said, the ones that were from Texas that I do know all came to California in the 60s. So in my mm-hmm. mind, they're Californians.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I mean, I moved from Texas to California. It was one of the best decisions I ever made in my fucking life.
Just like my great grandma. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. There is a thing that you get. I mean, I say it's about half of the people that I love in the world still live in Texas. There's wonderful things about it. There's
of
stuff
course.
That only Texas has. But like, there is a feeling a lot of people get living in Texas that more or less I would sum up as, whew, I got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Like, I got to get the fuck out of this place.
One of my DJs is from San Angelo that I work with. And same thing. He was just like, I'm a Texan, but I cannot wait to leave. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know it is indelibly printed on my soul. There's all sorts of things about me that are very deeply Texan, but like, totally. I just hit a point where I was like, I'm gone.
Yeah,
I gotta get out of here.
And
Hounds
what else?
Coffee is great.
Yeah,
Davis Street Espresso in Dallas.
Texas. Marfa's
a lot of great
dope.
Things.
I like a lot of West Texas. Had some real good times in Hill Country. There's kinds of freedom that you can have in Texas if you're a white person. I should state
I say,
that.
Wait a minute now.
Yeah, if you are a
time
white
out.
Person.
Yeah.
Yeah. that you don't often find other parts of this country, even as a white person. There's like things that you can get up to in Texas that are absolutely nuts. But it comes with a couple of caveats, one of them being the fact that Texas has probably the most nightmarish juvenile justice system in the entire United States, which, we have discussed a number of times on this podcast, including earlier this week, has a pretty shitty history with juvenile justice. Texas is unquestionably the worst. Like, the state that is has the worst history with juvenile justice. And that's, Texas is winning in a contest that includes fucking Florida.
It's crazy.
Like, fuck, do you know how much Florida hates kids?
Yes. Florida really, really hates kids.
Texas, woo boy. Yeah, that's what we're about to talk about today. So in our last episode, I opened by giving a history of the term super predator. And while that specific term was the creation of a single man, he was simply the latest in a line of men who have spent generations building and reinforcing a narrative that some children are inherently dangerous and must be policed brutally for the safety of all. William S. Bush is a PhD U.S. history professor from the University of Texas at Austin, and he's a good guy. I introduced him after talking about the super predator thing. No, he knows his shit. He wrote a book that is one of the major sources for this episode with one of the most chilling titles for a book I've ever heard. It's called Who Gets a Childhood? And it is about the criminal justice system in Texas. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's interesting, dude, because it's like one of the things among like black activism is the idea that like black and brown children are forced to be adults in the eyes of the law way before we're ready to be it. So, man, okay, this is crazy.
Yeah. And he does focus a lot of it is about racism in the Texas criminal justice or juvenile justice system. Yeah. It's a good book. I recommend it. It's very readable. It is kind of an academic text, but it's a very readable one.
That's dope.
Now, Bush, and this is a book about Texas specifically. Mm-hmm. Bush notes that historians of childhood tend to agree that the concept of what they call protected childhood started in the United States around the 1820s. Obviously, this is a thing happening in different parts of the world in different ways. But like we now see childhood as like you have to, not just that like you have to protect children, which is a thing people have always done, but you have to protect children from certain things like understanding and interacting in the world the same way an adult does, right? Mm-hmm. Kids don't work. They shouldn't. Most people agree on that now. Like, kids should not labor like adults labor.
Yeah.
Kids should not be subject to some of the realities that adults are subject to. We can always debate some of this stuff, like particularly hiding certain realities of the world from kids. But these are things society broadly agrees upon now. This is what a protected childhood is, right?
Yeah.
The idea that you protect kids from some of the things that adults have to deal with and know.
Yeah.
The movement towards this concept of a protected childhood in the United States, and again, we're talking in the U.S. here. It happens other places different ways. There's a lot of academics here. Please, I'm not trying to. This is a broad overview.
Yeah.
This movement starts with the free school and Sunday school social movements, which again, kind of the 1820s come down, as we've talked about actually in a couple of recent episodes. These all start in like the Northeast and kind of spread to the rest of the country. These ideas that like school should be free. Every kid should get an education and it shouldn't cost them anything. And also the idea that like Sunday school is a thing, which is, you know, tied to religion, but also tied to this idea that like this very new idea that like education is a thing that every kid deserves.
Yeah.
So people died all the time back then for basically no reason, which also meant that like in this period, there's a ton of orphans, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so when people started this kind of long process of giving a shit about childhoods for children, it leads to a bunch of facilities getting opened, not just to deal with orphaned kids, but to deal with like kids who were delinquent, kids who have various kind of behavioral issues. They all kind of get shoved into the same place. These are generally called houses of refuge.
Yeah.
And it's a mix because obviously they are saying like, well, if you're homeless or if you're a kid committing petty crimes, you belong in the same place, which is not great. But also it is good in that it's kind of as a society, people being like, well, even though they're not my kid, I, as a member of society, have some responsibility towards them. Yeah, it's just to fund this facility, which is not a bad development. Again, it's problematic, but
yeah, but it's a communal understanding that like the children are ours.
Yeah.
Like not just yours, they're ours. And like we, and if we want to like live in a community that we enjoy, like I should invest in, you know what I'm saying? The other humans around me, you know what I'm saying?
I think often when we talk about movements like this, it is easy to focus on like the horrible negatives, which we'll be talking about. Everything today we're going to talk about comes from this, but it's all, it's not one thing or the other entirely. It is, there's a lot that's fucked up about this. It also is coming from this place of like, oh, there's all these children on the streets and like, maybe we have a responsibility to them.
We could probably do something about
this. We live here too.
Babe, where your mama at?
Yeah.
Where
what are you doing out there?
Where your people? What you doing on the court? You're 3 years old. Why are you on the court? Yeah. Dude, I would even say this, man, like even just going through as a parent, like I'm saying this as like a now a parent, is like even when going through just the history of the decisions other parents or societies have made for their kids that obviously that weren't preposterous, but ones that are like, the reality is like, there's no, this a whole ass human.
Yeah.
And you're like, there's nothing more terrifying than the idea of like, their life is in my hands and I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Like that existential dread, I feel like if you're going to be a good parent, you have felt that fear where you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. You know what I'm saying? And you're like, I don't want to fuck this kid up. You know what I'm saying? And you know, you're like, well, I'm fucked up. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I don't know. I think like you're like, I don't know what I'm doing, but at least I know you shouldn't live on the damn streets, man. Like there needs to be some sort of adult in your life. Right. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of happening on a really broad scale here.
Yes.
And a lot of it's made possible because of industrialization, but there's a lot more people from industrialization, kind of more resources. And so like these facilities kind of grow in size and start popping up all over the United States throughout like kind of the mid to late 1800s. Now, at the same time all this is happening, and part of why it's happening is that the U.S. is creating its middle class, and in fact, the very concept of a middle class. Parents start having fewer kids and devoting a lot more time and attention to the development of the kids that they do have. Mm-hmm. And the idea starts to spread as a result of all this that children don't just deserve maybe to be housed, but deserve to learn and play and not to die in coal mines or like bang drums while adults shoot rifles at each other, right?
At
like,
some point,
we maybe shouldn't be doing some of the things we're doing with kids.
At some point you said to yourself, you know, my childhood was trash.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really get to that. Look, I wish I could have been able, you know what, when I have kids, I'm gonna let them play outside. You don't need to go to no coal mine and die.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's happening in this period. And the kind of the people who, these early advocates of the concept of a childhood, these early like people who are supporting the idea that there should be restrictions on like what we can make kids do. Mm-hmm. They're generally called child savers. And most of them are middle class moms. And it's from them and this advocacy in kind of the late 1800s that we get stuff like age of consent laws, child labor bans, and compulsory education. Yeah. That's all good stuff, broadly speaking. But these positive moves occur along more muddled developments too, because these women are also responsible, these activists are also responsible for the concept of youth curfews, the idea that like, well, we shouldn't let kids out at night sometimes and they should be punished if they are out at night, and the juvenile justice system, which is a very mixed bag. William Bush writes, many of these reforms were aimed at extending the protections of childhood to working class and poor children. Moreover, they sought to broaden the years of protection and semi-dependence on adults upward into the adolescent years, a reflection of the slowly spreading idea of adolescence itself at the turn of the 20th century. One of its leading proponents, the Clark University psychiatrist and child study movement leader Granville Stanley Hall, described the life stage of adolescence famously as a time of storm and stress, a time of risk-taking, rebellion, awkwardness, and self-discovery. Adolescents, he and other psychiatrists such as William Healy proposed, needed to be treated individually, especially when they ran afoul of rules, as seemed almost inevitable. Early juvenile court judges, such as Denver's Ben Lindsay, helped popularize the idea of the tough but fatherly juvenile justice official for whom understanding his wayward charges was a specialty. Meanwhile, courts for delinquent girls, headed by matronly figures such as Mary N. Barthelme of Chicago, preoccupied themselves with curbing the precocious sexuality of working-class girls, whose families were often recent arrivals in American industrial cities. So again, a lot going still, on here, you know?
Yeah, still products of your time.
Of its time, but yeah, yeah. This is kind of how this starts to look. Yeah, and it's important to note that, like, because we're talking about how bad the juvenile justice system, the idea that we should have one came from a really good place, which is that, like, yeah. Kids shouldn't be treated as adults when they commit crimes.
Yeah, you shouldn't be in prison with grown-ups. Yeah.
Yeah, you shouldn't be in prison with grown-ups. You shouldn't be judged by the same judges who judge grown-ups. Like, we should have a separate thing for you, in part because kids are going to fuck around. And, like, they're like the finding out part of that shouldn't be as brutal as it is for adults.
Yeah.
Judge Lindsay even complained, quote, this business of punishing infants as if they were adults and of maiming young lives by trying to make the gristle of their unformed characters carry the weight of our iron laws and heavy penalties. Yeah,
that's a good place.
Yeah. There's some people who are saying really good shit. Now, in Texas, juvenile and adult offenders were first separated in 1886 after protests from the local Women's Christian Temperance Union, which is right around the same time it starts happening in a bunch of other places. The next year, the legislature in Texas passed a bill approving a dedicated house of correction for children. Gatesville opened in January of 1889, and it was one of the first dedicated juvenile detention facilities anywhere in the United States. It was followed later that year by facilities in Virginia, Kentucky, and Alabama. Gatesville opened with 86 inmates. It was immediately popular with the locals, who saw rightly that it would bring a lot of jobs to their town. Local residents actually raised money, so the state can't pay, like, their budget runs short, and they can't pay for all of the land they need to buy this facility. And people who live in the town nearby raise the money to buy it for the state, because they're like, well, this is going to provide us with jobs forever if we have a child prison in town.
Oh my God, why is that their first thought? Was like,
yeah, it's everybody's first thought when this shit happens.
I was like,
spoilers,
what?
That's where this is going for the next century.
That's why I went, what? It's like, I thought they were going to be like, oh, that's cool, man. You know, yeah, kids ain't got to, shouldn't have to go to jail.
No, there's
like,
money in this shit.
Oh, wait, we can make some money off this mug. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yo, hit the lick, bro. Like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. So the boys who were interned in Gatesville were overwhelmingly city dwellers. And there's this idea at the time that Texas never gets past that kids who are juvenile delinquents, most of whom are urban kids, need to be put in prisons far away from their families in isolated rural communities. Basically, all of these kids were poor, too. One survey of early Gatesville inmates found that 119 out of 195 listed their mother's occupation as housekeeper, while the leading descriptions of their fathers were unknown, railroad men, laborers, and farmers. Unknown being up there is should tell you something about what's going on. Two-thirds of these boys had lost one of their parents, and slightly less than half of their parents had criminal records themselves. William Bush goes on to note that the racial disparity in who went to Gatesville was pretty blatant. African Americans comprised 46 of the first 68 inmates, all of whom were transferred from the adult prison system. Although Gatesville admitted inmates regardless of race or ethnicity, it strictly segregated every aspect of their daily lives: housing, schooling, dining, and religious services. As a result, by 1917, about 250 black inmates crowded into Harris Hall, the Jim Crow congregate dormitory built to house about half that number. By contrast, when the state opened its first and only training school for girls before World War II, it excluded black females altogether. Black girls charged with committing a crime in this period may have had their cases heard in local juvenile courts, but the available remedies were limited to the county jail or release back into the community.
There is nothing new.
Yeah. I mean,
oh my God,
not exactly news that Texas in 1917 was pretty fucking racist. But it's good to have data on how racist.
I also just... Yeah, like, I'm still, like, trying to picture a juvenile hall in the 1800s.
Oh, God.
Right?
Ooh, yeah.
And I'm just, like, spiraling. Like, it just got me spiraling and think, like, I just don't know how anyone survived the 1800s.
Yeah, and one of the worst things to think about is the degree to which maybe it wasn't much worse than it is now, at least in a lot of these facilities in Texas.
Yeah.
But that's something we can talk about. So the fact that Texas would go on to lead the nation in juvenile incarceration had a lot to do with the fact that Texas was the only southern state to see a net gain in its black population during the first half of the 20th century, right?
Yep.
That's part of why they're building these facilities is they have this huge influx of black and Hispanic citizens moving to the state.
Well, the Hispanics were already there. But.
Yes. But you do have more like coming in from Mexico and stuff. And you also have you have a huge number of poor non-white kids moving into Texas cities, a lot of whom don't have parents for a variety of horrible reasons. And this causes a backlash from white Jim Crow supporting citizens who don't like seeing all of these kids who are not white in what they think of as their cities. Yeah. Police do the thing that police do, which is response to the demands of middle class white people, and they start sweeping juke joints, which is generally how the places they sweep to arrest black kids are described. I think it's like, you know, it's like a dance hall.
Club. A juke is
it's what they've got at the time.
The juke joint. A lot of great music came out of there.
Now, the nation's first juvenile court was established in Chicago, and the focus of this court was, at least on paper, supposed to be rehabilitating the kids that got interned in the system. Texas, though, and obviously Chicago, like that system, you know, a lot of flaws in it, a lot of things that they could be criticized, could probably do an episode about that. But it's worth noting that the first juvenile court in the nation is in Chicago, and it's supposed to be focused on rehabilitation from the start, because Texas follows soon after. Their juvenile justice system, from the start, very openly, is not about rehabilitation. Wow. They specifically say, like, that's not our goal here. We are here to punish kids. Gatesville became what one activist group described as an instrument of torture. In 1912, a new superintendent for the facility ordered the banning of several forms of corporal punishment that had started in the late 1800s. And these sound somewhat tortury. I'm going to read a quote from Who Gets a Childhood. If you want, this will give you some context on what it's like being in a juvenile prison in Texas in the late 1800s and start of the 1900s. Adams outlawed pulling toes, in which boys were forced to stand holding their toes with their hands indefinitely, and bustings, in which boys were made to stand with their arms held over their heads while a guard flogged them with a bat. I don't think that's flogging. That's just hitting a kid with a bat. That's not flogging. A flogging is something soft, right? It's pretty ugly too, but like, that's just hitting a kid with a bat.
That's
not flogging.
That's not flogging.
That's just beating a child with a heavy stick.
Yo. I was like, the image is egregious, and the sentence for which you used to explain the image is egregious, because that's not flogging.
Now, so in 1912, this new superintendent orders these things banned, and the guards revolt. They initially express their displeasure by allowing more than two dozen kids to escape over a 3-day period, right? So they just stop doing their jobs.
We'll show you. You want to be nice to these kids.
Yeah.
We'll put them on the streets.
Streets, and then you'll see, you know. Eventually they walk off the job, just completely strike, which forces the superintendent to recruit local citizens, most of whom supported the guards, to serve in their place. And obviously, very little gets actually changed.
Yeah.
Because... and this will be a pattern. These trends will continue through the rest of the story.
Oh my God. Why are you
someone,
on strike?
In this case, the guy running it, recognizes a problem, tries to change it, and a mix of the guards working at the facility and the local citizens say, absolutely not. You ain't improving shit. And nothing gets done.
Can you imagine that? You're unionizing and somebody's like, why y'all unionizing? Because they won't let us beat the kids with bats.
Yeah, imagine like a couple of like, well, we're unionizing because we're all going to die from the black lung and we'd like our pet families to get slightly more money and maybe have weekends off. Oh, well, we're unionizing because people keep burning to death in garment fires. They won't let me hit kids with a bat anymore.
Yeah, you like, yo.
Our struggles are the same. Solidarity forever.
Whose mans is this? Like, who invited these fools? Who's written, y'all gotta go.
It's very funny that right around the same time, like, miners are fighting with machine guns and rifles for the right to have a life outside of the job and not be beaten by the boss's guards. Yes. Other guys are striking for the right to beat kids
Kids with bats. Listen, that is the quintessential, the absolute, the perfect example of, yo, whose man's is this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yo, who let them in? Mm-hmm. That's not, we're not the same, fam.
Yeah. Well, and probably a bleak story is how many of those other union men would see this as the same struggle. Because a lot of racism in the union struggle. So, you know. But you know who's not in favor of flogging children with baseball bats?
Let me tell you who not.
Products and services that support this podcast, unless it's the Washington State Highway Patrol.
I don't know. Yeah.
The FBI or...
I got to tell you, man. Look, that island ain't no game.
They're often called the Washington State Highway Patrol of the food box industry.
Listen, I am team.
That's right. Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So, for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. What's the catch? There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/behind. That's mintmobile.com/behind. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/behind. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Oh, we're back. So, prop.
Yeah.
Juvenile detention facilities spread across Texas throughout the first half of the 20th century. They came to be known as reform schools or training schools, even though neither of those things was ever much
neither
of a priority.
Are happening.
Yes. We'll call it a school. School of hard knocks.
This is school in the sense that we got some desks.
Yeah. Fucking dude walks in with a baseball bat, slams it on the table. Who's ready to learn calculus?
Carry the one, Martinez. Hits the kid with a bat. Like, God. Yeah.
Not you funny. Get this one wrong, and I'm going to bunt you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not funny. Okay.
Yeah, Gatesville remained the most brutal of the juvenile prisons in Texas. It was so bad that it had to build a cemetery on its grounds because so many boys were dying in custody. Yeah, Yeah, when your child in prison needs to add a cemetery, maybe. Maybe we got a problem.
You killed
Kenny,
guys.
I'm guessing the kids who wind up there, like, they don't have any parents left alive or something, right?
True.
Like, maybe they're kids that are total wards of the state or whatever, and so it doesn't matter what happens to them in the eyes of the state. You can just throw them in an unmarked grave.
No one cares.
Now, one of the worst cases of this occurred in 1921, when a guard strangled a 15-year-old named Del Timms to death in front of two other boys. So,
wow,
not good places, 1921. Eventually, all the stories of abuse led to enough outrage that, in 1948, the state legislature appointed a special commission to study these schools. So, the state of Texas, boy, kids are, 20 years later, kid gets strangled to death, right? Like, yeah, it takes a while. Stuff builds. There's other deaths. There's a lot of complaints. But eventually, the state of Texas is like, well, it's our duty. We got to get in there and really look at these facilities.
If one guy dies... Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
Two guys dies. Hey, maybe they were together. 10 now, guys die. Maybe we should call.
We'll have a guy look into it.
Yeah.
Like 10 kids getting beaten to death is like
that's a
the
lot.
Equivalent of like when your washing machine floods the house for the third time and you're like, all right, I got to call a fucking dude.
I should probably call somebody right now.
So the Washington Post reports, quote, when experts and reformers visited the facilities, they recommended placing them entirely with smaller facilities located near metropolitan areas. In addition to removing the stigma of prison, such facilities would place youths closer to their families and enable the state to bring in professionals from the fields of childcare, education, and mental health, a community-based vision similar to today's group homes and halfway houses. So that's pretty good advice. Given the state of things, that seems like an improvement.
Yeah,
but the legislature rejected this advice. Absolutely
not.
Of course
they did. Yeah. What is the most sensible, humane, like...
Kids should probably be near their parents and experts and stuff who can help
maybe
them.
Maybe we should get somebody that understands kids around here.
Oh, that pisses people
absolutely
off.
Absolutely not.
There was riots when they tried to stop the baseball bat beatings. Of course they're not putting these kids in a different facility. Heeding the demands.
What we're doing is perfect.
Yeah. Heeding the demands of the politically well-connected leaders of the state's youth prisons, who used the specter of Black and Mexican-American criminality to insist that young people required imprisonment, Texas instead expanded its construction of ever more sprawling prison-like facilities, sometimes strategically located in the electoral districts of key legislators. Abuse scandals continued to surface in television and newspaper reports. In 1952, a Houston lawyer filed an appeal on behalf of a 16-year-old girl who had spent nearly 200 days in isolation in the Gainesville State School after being held down by male guards and forcibly sedated with barbiturates. Another girl, who escaped the same facility, told a reporter for the Austin Statesman, I'll kill myself before returning.
That'll let you know how it's going in there.
Yep. So we've had two attempts to reform things, first in 1912, then in 1948. Two big attempts. So far, they both met with massive protests from the people who lived in and around, and also protests from lawmakers who know that if you put a child prison in a town where maybe you don't have a great electoral edge, suddenly all the people who get jobs there, that's your voting base, and you can like lock that shit down.
It's like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but like, yeah, in Texas defense, they tried at some point to do something reasonable, and it was like, well, Texas going Texas. Never mind.
It was Texas that stopped anything reasonable from happening. So I don't know about in the defense of the individuals who tried to reform things. Yeah.
The 15 people that flew in.
Yeah. Those folks were at least on the right track.
Just like, never mind. Yeah.
By 1964, things were bad enough that a mix of parents and former Gatesville employees wrote a letter to President Lyndon Baines Johnson and the governor of Texas. They described the kind of abuse we've discussed already in this episode at length and compared the training school to, quote, a concentration camp. And man, statistically, at least one or two of those people had to have known what a concentration camp looked like, right? Some of them were World War II vets or something.
We kind of know what we're talking about, Joe.
Yeah, there was somebody in there who was like, I've seen a fucking concentration camp and this place doesn't look good.
I was there, bro. I was there.
So this leads to the biggest flurry of investigations yet. The FBI and the Texas Rangers both launch investigations into these facilities, Gatesville in particular, but also the juvenile justice system, like the juvenile incarceration education system in Texas. And also both houses of the Texas legislature launch investigations. So you've got like four big investigations going on, right? One of them federal. And when the FBI starts investigating stuff like this, for all of the critiques we have them, they always find shit, right?
Yeah, they're going to figure it out.
The most detailed documentation of a number of different law enforcement agencies' crimes comes from FBI investigations. Now, here's another fun question. Does it ever lead to anything?
No, never, never, no, no. I was like, they find a guy.
They find a guy. Nothing happens, but they find him. Like in Oregon right now, the Portland police are currently in contempt of the Justice Department for repeatedly refusing to reform their use of force policies and being unconscionably so brutal that the federal criminal justice system says you guys can't do this. And currently they've just said, yes, we can. And we'll see if anything happens.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fine.
And of course, in this case, nothing happens. All of these investigations start. And there's again, sweeping reports of abuses, horrible details about all the bad shit that's happening. The FBI is like, yeah, bad shit's happening. Texas Rangers are like, yeah, bad shit's happening. Both houses of legislature in Texas are like, yeah, bad shit's happening. Very little reforms happen. Attempts to make serious reforms are shut down at every pass by, again, local and state elected leaders who had training schools in their districts and didn't want to lose money. Yeah. By 1974, the reform movement was desperate enough that a bunch of former inmates, parents, and activists launched a class action lawsuit in federal court. This case, Morales v. Terman, brought another wave of psychologists, social workers, and prison consultants to not just Gatesville, but other juvenile detention facilities. Now, the guy who winds up in charge of this big investigation is a dude with the incredible name, Judge William Wayne Justice.
That's that boy's name.
Judge Justice. That's right. Yeah. Judge William Wayne Justice.
What an incredible
Texas judge name.
Yeah, he only had one choice for his career.
You will never convince me that's not the name of the judge in the Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
There's no other.
Yeah, that's what you call that guy. Like, retroactively, put a judge in there, make that his name. William Wayne Justice. What an incredible name for a judge.
Wayne, too.
Yeah, it's everything. Everything is in that name. So he takes this very seriously. He tours the Mountain View School for Boys, and he finds, as he does a surprise inspection of this facility, that the children there were, this judge is walking around, he sees children caked in old blood.
Oh my God.
Just left on their bodies, covered in bruises. And whenever he tries to talk to them, they're terrified just of his presence. They've been trained to just react with unthinking terror to the presence of an adult.
Yeah.
Howard Omart was also there. He was an expert. He was from the LBJ administration. He was an expert LBJ sent along, to look at things while Judge Justice was there. And Howard Omart later said, quote, "We have never seen anything quite as depressing, so deliberately designed to humiliate, to degrade, and to debase. It is surely oppression in its simplest and most direct form."
That is the worst, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Designed to humiliate, degrade, and debase. That's LBJ's man. And Judge Justice comes to the same conclusions.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not like LBJ is the greatest dude, but for him to be yo, this is wild.
Yeah. I showed my dick to a Secret Service agent this morning, but even I think this is beyond the pale.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I pissed on my own bodyguard once.
Yeah.
You have any idea how many people I've killed?
Yeah.
I ordered the firebombing of a country.
Yeah.
But this isn't right.
Yeah. But that's wild, dog. They doing these kids.
This place
wrong.
Is fucked.
Yeah.
So the extensive investigation spurred by the Morales v. Terman case revealed regular use of isolation in Texas juvenile criminal justice facilities, forced psychotropic drugs on children, and also rare forms of torture. Among other things, investigators found that children were being punished physically for speaking Spanish. So-called punk dorms had been created for juveniles the guards decided were homosexual. By this point, the state had overcome its squeamishness at incarcerating women, and in one facility, guards were found to have forced abortions on pregnant inmates.
Oh my God, dude.
A boy at Gatesville told a judge about a hazing ritual, told the judge, Judge Justice, about a hazing ritual he'd been forced to undergo, where a group of boys beat him unconscious while guards watched. To his credit, Judge Justice, I don't know about the rest of his career, judge in Texas in the 70s. Maybe he got up to some fucked up shit. Yeah. But in this case, he is as good as his name. And he issues a sweeping ruling that outlaws all of the fucked up shit found at the facilities and requires medical, psychological, and educational services to be made available for any children in a Texas juvenile justice facility or juvenile detention facility. The entire leadership of the state agency that oversaw these facilities was forced to resign. Texas put money into probation and other preventative measures, and the juvenile inmate population declined rapidly. So this is the first time that like real shit does happen.
God did the right thing. Yeah.
This makes the situation better. Judge Justice gets credit in this. He's a big part of like why less kids are in this system. However, as the Washington Post reports, quote, "The impact of Morales and other important federal court rulings was blunted by the persistence of structural racial disparities and renewed fears of violent juvenile crime. And while the Federal Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act of 1974 provided even more funding for state and local reforms, these kind of like prevention measures and whatnot, historian Elizabeth Hinton has noted that it also labeled, quote, economically vulnerable youths, most of whom are Black or Latino, as potentially criminal." That's the term used, potentially criminal. Yeah, while removing white middle class offenders from the formal justice system. And that's why the juvenile inmate system declines, right? It's because they put less white kids there. Like that's the big, which is good, right? It's like no kid deserves to be in a lockup. It's good that less are in there, but it doesn't fix anything, you know?
Nah, you don't want nobody in that system.
But no, like, nobody should be in that
you
system.
You just played the numbers.
And that is that is the main thing, is that the criminalization of white and mainly white middle class, because I think some white poor kids still wind up in these places.
Yeah, they still wind up.
But the criminalization of like white middle class kids stops to a large degree. Which is again, like, good.
They're mischievous.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, it's boys being boys. Yeah, mischievous.
It's like a racist firefighter who only rescues the white kids. And it's like, well, it's good that less kids died in the fire, but you shouldn't be a firefighter.
Hey, bro. Like, you want me to pat you on the back for that? I mean, I guess.
Yeah.
That kid's happy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
I still feel like you shouldn't be doing this job.
I still feel like. I don't know if you should get a plaque or anything for this.
Yeah. So in the late 70s and early 80s, things were, though, trending in a better direction. And again, the decline in the prison, because it is, I should be fair, there is a reduction in the number of Black and Hispanic kids who are sent to these facilities. That does go down. Like, it's not complete, but it is largely the kids who stop going to these facilities are largely white, right? It is largely based on race. Not to... Because again, I also don't want to be like completely shitting on the people who achieved this, because it's good.
And the idea that like you can't beat me with a bat no more, like the fact that a judge was like,
"Well,
look, man,
prop." Oh, a judge did say that. It does not stop.
Oh, God. But I'm just saying, like, let me at least give them that you was
They like, put less kids in these facilities. No, they keep beating them. They keep right the hell on beating them.
They was like, nah, we worried about volume. Quality is different.
We want like a more boutique experience where we really give each kid the beating they deserve. You know, our guards were just hitting too many kids. They were losing their passion for it.
Did you watch the Dave Chappelle show when it was on?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Do you remember the gay Klansman?
Yes. Yeah.
He was just like, we're like the Klan, but we're just a little nicer.
Yeah.
So we'll just ask you to leave, preferably back to Africa.
Yeah.
You know, we're just like, got it.
Yeah, that's kind of what we've done here. Now, in the late... Yeah, so again, things are getting a little bit better in the late 70s and early 1980s. Like, there are improvements. But then, like we talked about in our first episode, that's when crime really starts to rocket upwards, right? And all crime, but that does include juvenile crime. And the panic over super predators hits the media. Yeah. Between 1990 and 1996, 40 states expanded the number of juvenile cases that could be tried in adult court and given adult punishments. And no state went harder than Texas. When he ran for governor in 1994, George W. Bush campaigned with a promise to lock up more children. In 1995, after he won, the state legislature passed an omnibus juvenile justice reform bill, which brought even tougher sentencing for kids accused of crimes. The state budgeted another $200 million for facilities, which was enough to triple their capacity to incarcerate children. So, like, Texas is like, we gotta have at least three times times as many kids locked up in this fucking state.
Yeah, that'll prove thanks, that George I'm w. doing Bush. My job. Yeah.
It is worth noting, we forget sometimes, because the crimes against humanity he committed as president were so extreme. He did some of that while he was governor, too.
His mixtapes were pretty crazy. Like, y'all only looking at his major albums. I'm like, his mixtapes mm-hmm. were pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It's also
yeah,
important exactly. to remember, like, how all this is tied to, like, crack.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And that's too much to delve into. But yes, that is a big
like,
part of the story.
And I'm like, and... Let's not forget how we got crack. So we'll put that on the side. So like, yeah, it's funny how crime went up. Well, you know, I mean,
like with
crack.
Every evil thing in American history, the CIA is involved, just not directly in this part of it.
Kind of gave us crack though.
And that is a big part of like why there's all of this like terror over juvenile offenders and a big thing that like Bush and other Republicans campaign on. Mm. Absolutely. So we'll do a crack episode at some point. We really got to get
into
that.
You better do it with
me too. It's there's
we
a
need to do
boy.
The whole thing. Iran Contra scandal, like crack in the streets, Nicaragua, everything. Anyway, okay, that's a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. I'm saying it right now. So do that with me. Yes.
We'll get a couple of parts in there.
Yes.
So this period, the '90s, kind of the mid-90s, when Bush gets elected and you've got like this mm-hmm. omnibus juvenile justice reform bill, it's noteworthy in Texas because it's when they really everyone stops. It had kind of been trending this way, but this is when people really stop calling these places training schools and reform schools. Mm-hmm. Those terms die. The idea of like trying to hide what these places are dies because the people who want more of them just call them youth prisons and they're proud of that. They love the idea that they're making youth prisons. Like, they don't want to hide that shit. Because, like, you get elected for being like, oh, hell yeah, we're going to throw a bunch of fucking kids in
prison. Lock them up.
You think we got youth prisons now? When I'm governor, way more youth prisons.
I'm going to put all your kids, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put all they kids in prison.
And while they tripled their capacity to lock kids up, Texas also doubled the number of kids they were executing. Now, in the United States prop, from 1985 to 2005, 23 children were executed. 13 of those were in Texas.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
Texas fucking loves executing children. Oh, my God.
I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah. We are. Look, the United States has an executing children problem, but it's also largely a Texas problem. You know? That's a lot. Yeah. There's a bunch of other states. I don't know if you're aware. There's like 49 of them.
Yeah. I did not know that. Yeah. I am in shock and awe.
Oh,
right now.
Yeah. We are huge fans of executing children. Can't get enough of it, really. Now, this all continued swimmingly until February 16th, 2007, when the Texas Observer published an article about a horrific sex abuse scandal in a juvenile correction facility near Odessa in West Texas. And I'm going to quote again from Who Gets a Childhood. News reports reveal that the school's assistant superintendent, Ray Brookins, and its principal, John Paul Hernandez, had coerced sexual favors from several juvenile inmates over a period of at least 2 years. Compounding the alleged crime was an inexplicably slow response from authorities. Between December 2003 and February 2005, staff complaints about Brookins's and Hernandez's suspicious behavior had fallen on deaf ears in the upper echelons of the Texas Youth Commission, TYC, the agency charged with administering the state's juvenile facilities. Finally, in February of 2005, Mark Slattery, a volunteer math tutor from nearby Midland, was approached by two students who wanted to confess something icky. As Slattery later told a reporter, "I knew it must have been something bad if they had no word for it." Slattery soon discovered that boys were being led into the administration building each night for forced encounters with Brookins, who had used his power to unilaterally lengthen or shorten youth sentences to exact sex from inmates. He can make you stay longer if you don't fuck him.
Oh my God.
And that's what he does.
Oh, this just...
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, it's about as bad as it gets right there.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah.
Shout out, though, to Mark Slattery.
It
is important to note that, like, this guy clearly cares about these kids, is volunteering to teach, like, not getting paid, volunteering to teach math to incarcerated kids.
Yeah. Because
it's important for them to learn. And they clearly, it says a lot about him that these kids know... We can trust Mr. Slattery.
We can trust you.
We can tell him this, and he'll do something about it. By God, he does.
Yeah.
So fucking give this guy something. I don't know, a house, whatever.
Yeah, this mug is a mixed bag this episode where there's like some dudes are dope, some dudes are like actual bastards,
You do have to, like, this is an overwhelmingly bleak story, but whenever you get those little heroes, you gotta like,
yeah,
acknowledge that shit, because most people clearly didn't do what Mark did.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. And again, the Texas Rangers get involved, and this time they were a little more effective than they had been last time. Brookins and Hernandez are charged with a bunch of crimes. Both men are forced to resign, but the criminal cases against them grind to a halt in the local county prosecutor's office, and the U.S. Attorney's Office in San Antonio refuses to get involved.
What?
Because, like, again, why do you, like, this is bad for business. It's bad for everybody if this becomes a bigger thing than it needs to be. And this is thankfully where journalists come in. So obviously this gets out. This is a as everyone's reactions, this is a fucked up story.
Oh, yeah.
The Dallas Morning News is like, all right, well, let's do a journalism here. Because if this is happening, there's probably some other shit that's going on.
If there's one, there's four.
Yeah. So they carry out a huge investigation, which concludes that the Texas juvenile justice system had created, quote, a culture in which prison officials were free to abuse their power and punish children who tried to complain about them. So this story goes viral. National news starts to get on the trail. After the Dallas Morning News covers, it's a pretty big paper. The big guys, the really big guys, start to get in there. Follow-up investigations would eventually find more than 2,000 confirmed allegations of staff-on-inmate violence between 2003 and 2006, including more than 60 cases of kids with suspicious broken bones. To try and quiet up outrage, Texas launched an abuse hotline for their child prisons, which racked up 1,100 complaints in its first month. So,
God dog,
you know, it gets big. It reveals a bunch. The tip of the iceberg is revealed. Obviously, I'm going to guess more than 2,000 times staff beat kids in a 3-year period in all the Texas prisons. Probably a couple times. I'm going to guess more than 60 kids had broken bones.
I'm going to guess more than 60.
Because, you know, these are also kids. They're teens. There's a lot of oppositional defiance. I'm sure there's some kids who get bones broken and don't want to tell anyone because, like, I don't want you to know you hurt me, you know?
Yeah.
Or I don't want anyone to, like, you know. And obviously shit gets covered up. It gets hidden. I'm sure it's a lot higher, the actual number. They started releasing child prisoners. Texas did. And in March of 2007, a Department of Justice investigation concluded and found that conditions in the Evans, E-V-I-N-S, Regional Juvenile Center in Edinburgh, Texas, were bad enough that they had violated the constitutional rights of imprisoned youth to be protected from harm while in state custody. Evans had an assault rate 5 times the national average. Once this news broke, there were more stories about the horrific conditions in the facility. William Bush writes, one of the most watched cases was that of Shaquanda Cotton, a 15-year-old African-American girl from the East Texas town of Paris, who received an indeterminate sentence up to age 21 for shoving a hall monitor in school.
What?
Portrayed in the net. Yeah, she shoves a hall monitor and she gets an open-ended sentence. We can keep you up until you're 21 if we want to.
What the fuck is an open-ended sentence?
Yeah.
I've never even heard of that.
So because of the way the Texas juvenile justice system gets, a lot of these are for like up to 5 years. Again, that's why that's what we talked about, like those people, the superintendents of those facilities, of that facility being like, hey, if you don't fuck me, I'll keep you here longer. That's why they can keep them here longer. They get to decide how long the sentence is. It's an up to this long in prison.
That's the difference. Okay, now I'm seeing like difference between California and, because I'm like at 18, you like it gets your record sealed like when you're a juvenile.
Yeah, it's dang. I mean it's fucked up.
I mean you could get transferred to like the adult prison, but like dang, for them to be like, nah, we'll keep you at 21, because dang, that's crazy.
So Shaquanda Cotton, this story goes really viral. People are horrified. The national press covers it. It gets looked at as a victim, as like racially motivated. Mm-hmm. And she gets a release in March 2007. She becomes kind of a cause celeb for how like racist the Texas juvenile justice system is.
Yeah.
She subsequently described conditions at the Ron Jackson State Juvenile Correction Complex in Brownwood during an interview in 17. Magazine, quote, seeing the barbed wire fences and guards terrified me. I was given an orange jumpsuit and socks and taken to my quarters, a tiny room that had only a bed, a bookshelf, and a desk. Some of the other inmates had committed serious crimes, like murder.
This was, wait, you said 17 Magazine?
Yeah, she does an interview for 17.
For 17? That's kind of Wow.
Yeah, but yeah, good for 17. Yeah.
I didn't know 17 was doing
that's some,
like,
that's some Teen Vogue shit right there.
Yeah.
I guess like, Teen Vogue is doing some 17 shit. I don't know.
That's really because I'm like 17 predates them. I remember I remember 17 magazine running around the hood, and it was just the stuff that like for the little girls and the, like, dang, I didn't know they was about it like that. What year was this?
God, this is like 2007, 2008. Oh,
okay, it's a little more recent than.
Yeah,
okay,
2007.
My bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. So like the internet's kind of up and running at this point.
They're still body shaming girls, but at least they're doing these articles about girls in
prison. At least they did this.
Yeah.
So people start to care again about abuses in Texas state facilities. Whistleblowers come forward. Randall Chance, a former inspector for the state's juvenile correction facilities, says in an interview that, quote, and this is him, Randall Chance, like, works for the state juvenile correction agency, and he inspects facilities. He gives an interview where he says, staff are being paid your tax money to rape your children.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Not very sparing.
Let me cut it. Straight shot, no chaser, homie.
Yeah.
Let me cut it very clean for you.
Yeah.
This was happening.
He describes TYC, the agency he works for, as a dynasty of corruption that condones the mistreatment of youth in its care. So again, reforms are demanded. The TYC governing board is overhauled. They throw out the old guys running it, bring in new ones. A state investigation is ordered, and as you'd expect, it found a lot of evidence of individual wrongdoing. The blame was placed on the culture of the agency, which was described as having somehow become uniquely toxic. Little discussion focused around the fact that Texas had been this bad for two-thirds of a century. Yeah. So again, this is what happens every time when something gets done. It's we're going to arrest and charge these individual guys who committed crimes. And we've got to, you know, there's a problem with the culture. We have to fire these dudes at the top, and we have to reform the agency to fix the culture because it's a culture problem. And I think at this point in the story, it should be clear. It's not a culture problem. It's a child prison problem. This is what happens when you have them. They keep trying to reform the culture, and the exact same thing happens over and over again. Reforms are fought by the people who live there because there's money in there, and by local politicians because that's where they get voters and fucking campaign donations from. And the abuse continues because the kind of people who are going to work the kind of jobs that are available at these facilities in the middle of nowhere, which don't pay well, are people who get... are willing to take a pay cut to get to hit kids or molest them. Like, it's not a culture problem. It's a child prison problem. The They're concept. Bad things to have.
Yeah. It's not the culture of this toxic planet.
Yeah.
It's the fact that you're on a toxic planet. I mean, yeah.
It's a culture in that, like, if you design a gun that can only shoot 7-year-olds, and the people who buy them, there's a culture problem among the people who buy the guns that can only shoot 7-year-olds.
Yeah.
Like, but I guess, they're probably all very unpleasant people, but that's not really the problem, is it?
Problem
it's that
is
we built a
gun
to shoot 7-year-olds.
Yeah. Yes.
The issue is not the people buying these are bad. They are, sure, but that's really not where the problem started, is it?
A little bit of a both and situation here, guys.
Do we need these things?
Nah, it's not an either or. I feel like it's a both and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know who doesn't shoot 7-year-olds, Prop?
Unless.
Unless it's the Washington State Highway Patrol again, in which case they do. But probably not. Unless it's then potentially yes. Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today. Health Aid Kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
We're back. So, if you were an optimistic type, you could be forgiven for looking at the fallout from the 2007 revelations of horrific abuse in Texas facilities and thinking like, shit, things are headed in the right direction again. Like this might, we might fix a lot of stuff. And a lot of good stuff does happen. I should say that Texas closes more than half of their youth prisons. They gut the juvenile justice system. They dramatically reduce the number of incarcerated kids. And resources are diverted from incarcerating kids to programs to try and prevent youth crime. This is great. Like, again, this is a big deal, but it's a big deal because it removes kids from the system. Journalists and politicians who demanded change and brought out this information improve material conditions for the kids who get released and the kids who don't go to juvenile prison because that becomes less common. That is undeniable. But it is not a reform of these facilities, because if it was a reform, it would mean that the facilities themselves are getting better. And that's not what happens. The facilities continue to be a fucking nightmare. There's less kids in them. Again, that's huge. Really big deal. But for those inside, I don't have a way of claiming this in any objective sense, because again, our data is always imperfect here, but like the same problems continue to persist.
Yeah. So it's like the statistics go down because there's just less humans.
Yeah. The reform is we got to take kids out of this thing, which might suggest that like if we really wanted to reform it, we would not let any kids be in these places.
Close it.
Yeah, we can close it forever. Yeah.
I mean, then there'd be no kids in it. That might work.
That would be my argument. And again, obviously, the people who succeed in this, it's not abolition, but it's a lot less kids in prison. That's great. But again, the facilities stay exactly the same as they've been for a century. So fast forward 10 years, 2017, the Dallas Morning News publishes a blockbuster investigation into abuses at the Gainesville State School, which despite its name is a child prison. It just happens to have some desks. Here's how that article opened, Prop.
Yep.
Youths at the Gainesville State School say staff paid them with drugs and cash to assault one another. A psychologist at the campus gave pornography to a boy there to encourage the young man to masturbate in front of him. A youth attacked a guard and stole his radio so he couldn't call for help. By the time the help arrived, the officer had a broken nose and needed 4 stitches over his eye. So
it's a Wild West in there.
Yeah, it's the Wild West in there, and like the same abuses are happening. And like that staff paying kids with drugs and cash to assault each other, that's bounties. That's like there's this whole system where the guards, when kids will like fuck with them, sometimes it's cases like this where they beat up a guard, but oftentimes it's just a kid they find annoying. They will pay other kids with drugs. They'll like give kids cocaine and heroin to beat the shit out of kids who annoy them. That's an endemic problem in this facility.
That's unfortunately
Common.
Not normal.
It's everywhere.
But it's usually not kids.
Like it's usually not children this is being done to. But again, Texas doesn't really see the need to treat them as children.
Nope.
Now, that article had a lot of really good stuff in it, very important piece of journalism, but it still contains some of the same problems we've seen over and over again. Here's one line I found particularly frustrating. "It's a bad culture," said Debbie Unruh, an independent watchdog charged with ensuring the safety of youths in the Texas Juvenile Justice Department's custody. "It's a dangerous culture." And again, that's true. It's a bad culture. The culture of like guys who wear guards in child prisons is bad. But that's not the central problem. The claim that like it's a problem with the culture at this prison might hold water if we didn't have a century of documentation that this happens in every one of these facilities that the state of Texas operates. It's constant and it's for generations. The article quoted juvenile justice advocates who once again complained that part of the problem was locking kids in remote rural facilities far from home, which is absolutely true, right? If you are looking at ways to minimize harm, don't put them so far away where there's no services.
Yeah. And like the frequency of your family visiting.
Yeah. It's going to be higher, which is good for you.
The harder it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that article also contains more detail about the staff psychologist who gave a child pornography so that he could watch that child masturbate. And I'm going to read a quote about that now. Vincent Rager, now 31, began working at Gainesville in 2015. His online resume indicates he provided individual psychotherapy to boys at the school. Rager resigned during the investigation, officials said. Records show he resigned in lieu of involuntary separation, so he resigns in order to avoid being fired.
Of course.
Reached by phone earlier this week, Rager said he resigned because he wanted to move to California. Rager now works as a clinical psychologist treating male prisoners at Kern Valley State Prison in Bakersfield, California. Now, they're adults.
Well, they're grown-ups, so it's different.
So that's better.
Oh, my God.
I might say you should never get to work as a clinical psychologist again if you do that. Like that might disqualify you for doing that ever.
I feel like you should not have a license to do any of this.
Yeah. So again, we should consider perhaps the possibility that like this is not just a problem with like Texas. It is also an American problem, right? He goes right away and gets a job in fucking California.
How do you like, are we that hard pressed for people to care about, like we're that hard pressed for like employment?
These facilities are in the middle of nowhere. They pay for shit. It's not enjoyable work. It's not very well respected work. So like I know there are good people doing that job in the system, but like a lot of bad people get that job because it's like you're not getting the very best generally.
Yeah, you have to be mission driven.
Yeah.
If you're going to stay in that work because the work is trash.
Yeah, it's like you get great teachers in these juvenile facilities sometimes, like the guy we already talked, Mark Slattery, the guy we talked about.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, that's where I started teaching. I started teaching in juvenile facilities. I was like, man.
But also, you're going to get a bunch of basket cases who this is the gig they could get because they did something.
Yeah, and it's not, if it's easy to not, like you're, as this whole episode is, it's easy to not care and still get away with it because you're just, from a teacher perspective, it's just some couple packets. It's like continuation school. If anybody ever been to that, it's like, it's packets. You just fill out the packets and I just make sure you guys don't hurt each other. And the way that I'm sitting right now, y'all can't see this, listeners, but like my feet are like leaned up against the wall. I'm leaning back with the mic in my feet. I don't have to care about, I can sit like this for the 30 minutes of class and just make sure you don't stab each other. And if you do, all I gotta do is call the PO and he comes in.
Yeah, and then you'll go, you know, to a worse place potentially.
Yeah, basically. You have to care if you're gonna be in it. Yeah.
And you get in these places, special ed isn't all that different. You get this mix of like the most dedicated, wonderful, caring people imaginable and people who are either just waiting out a clock and then a tiny number of people who are fucking monsters and know that that's monsters. Where the least eyes are on them, you know?
Yes.
And perhaps more could be done to make more caring and wonderful people able to do that job and at least fewer monsters. I'm not going to say, like, look, you're always going to have some people waiting out the clock, but you don't have to have the monsters.
Exactly.
let's set that as a goal. Hire fewer monsters.
In as much as you can.
Yeah.
You know, because some people get through the cracks. Like, I ain't gonna lie, I know some personal information about that, but like some people get through the cracks. But, you know, somebody's obviously a monster. Maybe don't hire them.
Yeah, maybe don't hire monsters. Speaking of monsters that somebody hired, Governor Greg Abbott in 2017, there's this, all these, well, this is, I mean, he's not the bad guy or the good guy here. He does the thing that everyone else does every time something like this happens. There's this big investigation and all of this press about how bad Texas's juvenile justice system is, and he fires the person in charge, right? How many times has that happened, this fucking story?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of talk of reform and yada, yada, yada. That nothing significant changes, or at least the changes do not fix all the problems that we have been talking about all episode. Here's the New York Times reporting in 2019. Quote, in October 2019, a prison officer who worked at a juvenile detention facility in Central Texas was charged with sexual assault and accused of forcing a boy in custody to perform oral sex on him in his cell. The incident came to light the day after the alleged crime, when the boy tried to kill himself. 2 months before that, at another detention facility in Texas, a corrections officer was fired after a teenage girl said she was pregnant with his child. He was later charged in connection with that case. And in May of last year, another prison worker was arrested on charges that he had carried on a relationship with the teenager who was on parole. At five state juvenile detention centers, the day-to-day conditions are relentlessly violent and oppressive, with guards often resorting to force, according to a complaint filed to the Justice Department. In 2019, prison staff used force on incarcerated children almost 7,000 times, equivalent to six times per child who was confined there.
Whoa. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It just feels so personal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my God, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. So these findings came courtesy of yet another Justice Department investigation. How many of those have we seen this episode, right?
Yo,
the DOJ investigated. Hooray!
I hope we hear in the date, like, this is 2019.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know with COVID it make it, that feels like 1919 because of COVID, but that's 3 years ago, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That Justice Department investigation had started in 2018 when two Texas advocacy groups begged the federal government to intervene, arguing that Governor Abbott's promise to personally monitor the juvenile justice system would not be sufficient. It wasn't, which is why everything I read, you know, was found.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's good that the Justice Department documented this. But at the same time, I think this is kind of a perfect example of the actual logic behind ACAB. I think that slogan's a lot less useful politically than it ever has been. But the sentiment behind it applies because these investigators, these Justice Department people documenting this, this is important work. It's important to document this. It's critical. Yeah. And I think I'm sure these people care. I'm sure they see horrific abuse. They want to stop it. They document it. And I'm sure they go to bed each night exhausted and sad, but certain that they're doing work that needs to be done. Yeah. But as we've seen over and over again in this story, all of these investigations are part of how the system perpetuates itself. Guards rape and beat children. Whistleblowers and watchdogs complain. Government investigation leads to reform, and then guards keep raping and beating children. These investigations and the media cycle that follows them are a necessary part of the cathartic loop that Texas has been stuck in for more than 100 years. This is a part of the loop. This is how people, how it gets perpetuated again and again. Not that they're bad people for investigating this shit, but it also is like that when I say, like, you know, all whatever are bastards or whatnot in the system. Yeah. That's what we mean. The system eliminates the possibility of being good because the system cannot be reformed. So even if you're working for something that looks like reform in the system, a lot of what you're going to be doing is keeping the loop going. And it's not that simple because obviously some of these investigations are part of why there's a massive reduction in the number of kids who are incarcerated.
Yeah.
And that's huge. So it's not, I don't want to be painting it as that simple, but like, it just doesn't get better. The actual prisons themselves don't get better. There are less kids in them, and that's good. But the things keep happening because we just can't have these places and those things not happen.
Yeah, that's the argument about like abolition. It's just like we just have to start over. Like, because reforms, it's just duct tape, and it's not stopping. It's not fixing the problem. Y'all just keep adding duct tape, and
sometimes the duct tape muffles the sound from inside.
Yeah. Ooh, that's poetic, bro.
Makes people think that we fixed it.
Yes. That's pretty poetic there, Robert.
I do, every now and then.
Every now and then. Yeah.
Yeah. there's a part of me that questions the value of continuing to loop through all of these stories, all of these details of abuse, all of these statistics over and over again, every cycle that this happens. And because again, I think the only real thing to do is empty these facilities out, burn them down, and throw any person who suggests rebuilding them into the Gulf of Mexico. But that said, I also don't want to ignore the work that these journalists and these Department of Justice people do in documenting this, because the stories of these victims are important. Yeah. And so to close us out, I'm going to read one more quote from that article that I just cited from, about Christy Dennis. Her son was 15 when he was sent to the McLennan County State Juvenile Correction Facility in Mart, Texas. Quote, Miss Dennis was horrified when she called one day in 2019 and learned that her son had been beaten and taunted as guards apparently stood by. Her son was sent to the jail's doctors on one occasion, she said, and she was later told that many guards did not intervene because they were afraid of the youth themselves. Miss Dennis said her son ended up at the center after taking her car without permission several times and money from her purse. After talking to the authorities, she was advised that if she wanted to teach her son a lesson, he needed to go to a juvenile facility, a decision Miss Dennis said, a decision she ended up regretting. The attacks against her son escalated to the point where he begged guards to keep him in solitary confinement. Released in July 2020, months before his 17th birthday, he now works at a fast food restaurant and is earning his GED with plans to pursue welding. But he is not the same as he was before his detention, she said. He has PTSD. He hears a noise and he panics. And that's another important, when we talk about the complicity in the system and the degree to which maybe some of these people documenting these abuses are even complicit, another person or group of people who are complicit are parents in these communities. Yeah. Parents who turn in their kids, parents who support these laws, parents who support funding these places. I think it's probably fair to say that 100% of the adults I knew as a child were to that degree complicit in this system because they supported keep opening more places, the politicians who supported these places, and they were convinced that it was the right thing to do. And the result of a lot of people being convinced that this is the right thing to do, it's not just the rapists and the murderers and the pedophiles or the venal politicians who make this possible. It's the people who think they're doing the best thing for society. And the result of everything, of both the actions of these horrible rapists and whatnot and pedophiles and the actions of what I'm sure are loving parents and dedicated employees in the Justice Department, whatnot, the result of all of that is a system that rapes, beats, and murders children on an industrial scale.
That's why I opened this episode with, like, I am a parent, and the part of me that understands, at least can empathize what it feels like to have a child that you don't know what to do with. Like, I deeply understand that, you know, and the part of you that, like, the reality that you're still unpacking your own trauma, like just from just the time of age of civilization we're in, it was like you said, we were old enough to where we could get spanked at school. Like that's like, so we're like, it's not that long ago that we actually realized that that was barbaric. You know what I'm saying? So you're processing your own upbringing, realizing, and then the parts of you that feels like even with me, where I'm like, well, there's been times that I've been like, well, I kind of earned that spanking. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I probably should have got spanked for that. You know what I'm saying? That now I look at both my children and I'm like, ain't no way in the damn world I would put my hands on my kids. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just seems so like unthinkable. Like that I just don't think I could never do it. You know what I'm saying? But when I got married, again, I'm black. Like, black people spank their kids. When I got married, Southern people, they spank their kids. It's so normal. And so I'm like, that no doubt in my mind, my parents love me. Like, I would never take that from my parents loved me. I have a great relationship with my mom, at least. You know what I'm saying? But like, you know, a better one with my father now. But like, that being said, I'm like, the part of me that understands that you're just like, I don't, and I'm from the city. So I'm just, sometimes we be like, nah, then homie need to go to jail. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then, but then you get there, which is why I feel like sometimes for me and my wife, like us who've been advocates who have like, you know, been to the Congress, like stood to our front of our councilmen and been like, you know, our senators and been like, this shit got to stop. You know what I'm saying? Have like done the work, done the therapy for ourselves. We've made enough money to be able to do therapy for ourselves, to be able to be like, to come to the conclusions that we're at now, to be like, this shit isn't working. You know what I'm saying? And having the experience of like having friends that been through the system, you know, ourselves somehow, you know, having our own interactions with the system, to be able to look at our own children and everybody else's children and be like, listen, this is not the answer. You know what I'm saying? And it's not doing what you think it's doing. Sometimes I feel like that's a privilege of mine, even coming from poverty, coming from the hood, is having a privilege of understanding that like, yo, the system you think is going to rehabilitate your children has no, that was never in their purview. You know what I'm saying? That was never on the table, was rehabilitating them. You know what I'm saying? So I raised my children in a different, like, even just looking at like my own, like friends being like, yeah, we don't spank our kids, and being like, friends being like, what? Like, yo, I'll be like, no, like we've, you know what I'm saying? I'm stuttering now because I feel so passionate about this to where it's like the complicit, because you talked about the complicity, and that's the complicity that like sits as a parent to where you're like, but I'm also terrified for my child and I don't want them to make bad decisions. And I feel like they not listening to me. And I know what scared me straight was being scared. So I'm like, well, maybe that's gonna, but then you realize it's like, no, you're creating a criminal. You're traumatizing your child, not understanding how you're traumatizing your child, because you think they know you love them. But like all of that put together, and then like you said, like coming out of the other end and being like, I'm trying to do my best. I'm saying a lot here because like, again, it's so important to me. I just went through a situation on a nonprofit I'm on the board of that, like, you know, we had to go through a moment to where it was like, when you sit at the, I'd never been in a situation where I'm actually at the part of the table where I have the reins, like I can actually make change here. You know what I'm saying? Where I'm like, I'm actually the one in power now. Like I'm usually the one outside of the door. Now I'm actually in it. But then once you're sitting at that and you're like, oh man, there's really a lot at stake here. If I make this decision that seems so easy when I was outside, you know what I'm saying? But now that I'm in and you're like, that's like you, like how you keep trying to like balance your understanding of like these journalists and these like justice workers that were like, yo, like we're doing what is obviously the right thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But like at the end of the day, you still lay in your head like, but well, shit, dude, like, I mean, I can't, I mean, what we really need to do, you know what I'm saying? Like you said, what you really need to do is close them all.
Yeah.
But you're like, but fuck, like I don't have the, I mean, this is the best I could do. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, I understand so much more now at this stage in my life and my career and my parenting, like all of those nuances, you know? Yeah. I just wish I could just rap about it. I wish I could just rap about it and do podcasts. You know what I'm saying?
Well, like,
yeah.
I mean, you do. I you do have a podcast.
I do
mean,
have a podcast and yeah. I do talk about the shit, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Yo, this is
yeah,
a, this
I,
is
I
a
wish
good
I
show,
had
bro.
Some cathartic way to deal with it.
Yeah.
Rapping sounds actually extremely cathartic.
It really is, bro.
But
I still think, I think I said that when the first time I was on the show, like, yo, let me write a rap for you, man. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
I hear your rhythm, though. I don't know your rhythm. Like, if you have, if I could write it, but if you ain't got rhythm, like,
oh,
I don't know.
No, absolutely not. Okay. Yeah, that's that'll always just be something I have to admire from afar. But I don't know. What do you, you got anything to plug, Prop? At the end of this very bleak day of talking about child prisons?
I personally think that Prop should write that for you, and then we should perform it at the live show.
Okay.
I do have something to plug.
Well,
and it's
I'm happy with Prop performing at the live show.
No, I don't want think any, you to performing no, at the live
that's,
show.
That's not what they're paying for,
bro,
Sophie.
I bet you right now, if I were to throw on, because you mentioned it already on our show, if I were to throw on like a Mos Def, like a Black on Both Sides record, put it, you could probably rap along.
I bet you
there are songs out there, some Dessa, some of the, like the Doomtree stuff.
Yeah,
I bet you
stuff.
I could throw on a few of them tracks, few of them Atmosphere songs. Yeah, I already know that you could probably rap along.
I may have listened to an Aesop Rock or two in my time.
Yes. And that's listen, that's some complex rapping. Like, you know what I'm saying? That ain't some easy bars. Like, that's some complex rapping. Well, anyway, yes.
Oh,
prophetpot.com.
We'll see how drunk I get during the live stream. But that's one more reason to check out the live stream.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And hit me on Twitter. I'm trying to come up with a game for us to play during the live stream that might involve how drunk Robert gets.
I feel like all the ones are like the boy howdies and like the Hitler calls. I'll be like, man, luckily nobody calls me out on my, like, you know what I'm saying? Because I feel like
you wasted. Wasted immediately. First 10 minutes.
Yeah, bro.
Anyways.
Yeah, prophetpop.com. I got some new coffee content coming out.
Dope.
Like, got some music and Hood Politics Pod, man. Got renewed. Thank you, Cool Zone. So there's more shows coming. You know what I'm saying?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So we'll be up in there.
Check it out. Check out Prop. Check out Prop's book.
Terraform.
Check out us out for our live stream on
check out our live stream on
February 17th, momenthouse.com/behindthebastards.
Yeah, check that out. And also, I have a fiction book that is on pre-sale right now. If you order during the pre-sale for the next couple of months, you will get a signed copy when it comes out in May. Google AK Press After the Revolution, and that's where my book will be. AK Press After the Revolution, buy a copy of my novel.
You can learn about Skullfucker Mike.
Skullfucker Mike! All right.
Yo, that's a great book, man.
Thank you.
Like, fiction's hard to write. It really is.
Boy, howdy.
It's a real
one
pain
would
in
think
the ass.
That you're like, well, I'm making up a story. Like, we've been making up stories since we've been sneaking out in front of our parents. Like, we've been making up stories. But, like, it's really hard. So, like, yo, kudos
it's
to you.
Way
bro.
Easier to just be a judge.
Apparently.
You can make money, send kids to jail. Mm-hmm. Great.
Boy, howdy.
All right. Boy, howdy, indeed. I am Texan. All right. That's the episode. Bam.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer founded and queer run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3XS to 6XL. Use code iHeart at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com. Shop now on tomboyx.com.